Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fear the Reaper by Fiona Quinn, narrated by Teddy Hamilton. Chapter 1. Sin. Friday afternoon. The clamor of humanity bumped and knocked against the slick glass walls of the airport departure hall. As the babbling volume swelled to overflowing, it swept upward into the rafters, where it perched, staring down at the incoming passengers. The din engulfed Cynthia Dimitrova as soon as the automatic doors mechanically slid wide. Stepping away from the snow-muffled DC morning, boots damp with salty slush, a blast of artificial heat rushed past Sin, pressing the frigid temperatures back away from the building's interior. The gust ruffled through Sin's collar-length brown wig, a strand caught in her freshly applied rose-colored lipstick. She stopped to brush the wayward tendril back behind her ear and adjust the strap of her purse higher onto her shoulder. Sin inhaled deeply. To her, airports smelled like sunscreen-scented tourist escapism, the garlicky fatigue of families fulfilling emotional obligations, and the wet wool of business banality. Banality was the category where she placed herself for today's flight. This certainly wasn't about fun. Though Sin's idea of a good time didn't necessarily line up with that of most people, to her, fun was edgy, exciting, dangerous. Mind games were fun. Power was fun. Winning was everything. This was a losing situation. No, not fun by anyone's standards. Certainly not Sin's. But a favor was a favor, and it would be repaid in time. She'd make sure of it. Sin glanced back at Nia, 19, sullen, and much more problematic than Sin had been led to understand. Nia would fail today's test, and Sin couldn't care less. Sin's psyche wasn't built to be nurturing, not even his tradecraft. What happened to Nia fell heavily on Nia's shoulders. Sin wasn't responsible for what happened next in this teen's list of poor life choices. Bright star? Hardly. Well, at least in this part of the job. Sin reached back to the teen's elbow and pulled her forward so they walked side by side, and Sin could keep an eye on her. She looked down at the girl. Nia was pretty enough. She liked to wear her hair in two buns on the top of her head like kitten ears. Artificial lashes fringed Nia's dark doe eyes. Her lips were soft and full, accented by baby pink lip stain and glitter gloss, the kind of lips that men would fantasize about encircling their hard cocks. Nia looked like she was just out of middle school, except for her ginormous breasts. Yes, indeedy. Nia's most remarkable physical attribute was her enormous boobage that hovered over an otherwise toothpick of a body. It made her look theatrically top-heavy, like she needed the strong hand of a daddy figure to keep her from toppling over. If a man had a pedophile fetish, Nia was someone to fantasize about and still keep things legal if push came to shove, came to grunting orgasm. Sin could see why others in their organization might find Nia compelling as a tool. A screwdriver, Sin thought with a smirk. Depending on the guy's fantasy, with the right clothes, hair, and makeup, Nia could continue exploiting men who liked to think with their dicks. In Sin's experience, that was a goodly portion of the male population. Gullible when their egos and cocks were stroked. Manipulatable when their Johnsons thought they'd have an in. In this circumstance, though, Nia wasn't using her assets to her advantage. The girl was blanched white, making her sparkly pink blush stand out like two circles of color painted on a discount store doll. Her hand clenched the pull handle of her bag, unblinking eyes held too wide for too long. Her hostage-like behavior was going to attract attention, if not scrutiny. Hardly the victim, Nia had asked to take the next step up the rungs of the Prokhorov family ladder. Dragging her carry-on bag behind her as she moved into the press of travelers, Sin's voice was barely audible, pitched to reach Nia's ears only. "You're going to be fine. Complete your task. Get on your plane. Done."
"I have to pee," Nia announced. "Can it wait until we get through the security check?"
Nia rubbed the flat palm of her free hand over her mouth, her eyes watery.
"Probably not."
Sin stepped around the guy who had stopped mid-stride, patting frantically at his pockets.
She scanned the corridor ahead of them, looking for a sign, pointed and headed in the direction of the blue triangle skirt icon jutting out overhead. Nia's anxiety was palpable, but Sin wasn't going to worry about that. Sin had a solution hiding in her coat pocket. She didn't get this far in life by not thinking ahead. Besides, of all places to be agitated, Sin reasoned, this was it. At the airport, anxiety was par for the course. The thing about airports, Sin mused as she bustled along with the crowd, was that they were filled with navel-gazers. Everyone was busy with the act of moving from departure to arrival. Little worries felt big. Will the plane be on time? Will I make my connection? Will my bag get there when I do? Will my things be safe? There were the bigger worries, too. For people who hated to travel, this was a time to confront the phobias that made their flight feel like a game of Russian roulette. Phobic travelers were easy to spot, checking the weather apps for information about turbulence, wringing their hands and deep breathing, usually with no good effect. Angling out of the stream of passengers, then rounding into the ladies' room, Nia jogged down the line of doors. Sin took advantage of a free stall that opened up next to her. Pulling her carry-on in behind her, she locked the door and peeled off her coat. Almost immediately, the sound of gag puking came from her right. Sin was sure it was Nia. Absolutely gross, craven little shit. Unzipping, Sin dropped her jeans and panties to her knees. She sat on the toilet seat, still warm from the last occupant. She might as well settle in and wait for Nia's stomach to empty. The less time spent out in the open where Sin's face might be seen and remembered, the better. Protecting herself from facial recognition was probably overkill for the banality of this drop, but tradecraft had become muscle memory, and best practices should always be applied. One never knew. Shit hitting the fan was a truism. It was better to duck any blowback from the crap. And this unexpected assignment was total crap. Sin had been handed a coward to field test. The bathroom walls echoed with the clacking shoes of women coming and going, the whir of the hand dryer and running water. It sounded like the puking might be done. Glancing at her watch, Sin felt the pressure of their time window narrowing. Sin didn't know how long it would take to get through the security check. Sin pulled off a length of toilet paper and crumpled it into her hand. She stood, dragging her clothing back into place. Sin adjusted the padded vest that hugged her under her turtleneck sweater. A costuming prop, good enough to fool the TSA machines, and even a pat-down if it were required. Added a good 30 pounds or so to her frame, with the majority of the cushioning just under her breasts, it created a menopausal redistribution of weight and aged her about 15 to 20 years. Sin was aiming for early 50s, the oldest she thought she could get away with. This was the persona Sin used when she flew. The brown wig with a Jack Frost-like dusting of gray strands at the crown, the padding, and the proper application of high-tech makeup contouring meant that Sin matched her fake driver's license. The license had a good-to-go star in the upper right-hand corner, saying that the Department of Motor Vehicles had approved her identity. With a last tug of her turtleneck sweater, a smoothing swipe of her hands, everything was in place. The automatic toilet flushed as Sin reached for the lock, flecking her with bowl spittle. Disgusting. With a sigh, she moved out of the stall, pushing her carry-on bag, where she'd laid her coat and purse, out in front of her. After a quick wash of her hands, Sin slid past the bathroom attendant, relining the trash can. Sin turned her face away from the mirror. Habit, though her wig's long bangs did a bang-up job hiding her features. Moving down the rows of stalls, Sin peeked under the doors looking for Nia's shoes. There she was, in the last stall, her white, thick-soled tennis shoe tapping the ground. Sin knocked. Hey, you okay?
No.
Are you ill?
Pretty much.
Teenagers. Miserable fucking creatures. Come on out. Let's get your hands washed. I have something that will take the edge off. A woman came out of the stall, startled that Sin was standing right there. She sent Sin a suspicious glance, then looked toward Nia's door, and then hard eyes back on Sin. The woman looked like she had something in her background. Cop, maybe. FBI? It was in the way she squared off, the rigidity of her posture. Crap. Sin sniffed a deep breath as she stepped out of the woman's way. She talked to Nia's door.
Your therapist said that if you had a panic attack before we fly, you could take a pill. You won't feel the effects. It'll just take the edge off.
The woman moved away. Nia's door swung open. Jesus. Sin grabbed Nia's wrist and hissed into her ear. Get it together. Wash your face. Rinse your mouth. This is unacceptable. Reaching into her pocket, Sin pulled out a bottle, pressing her palm into the top. She twisted it and felt annoyance rising when it didn't give. Sin looked down at the bottle as Nia pushed past her.
I don't want a pill. I didn't ask you what you wanted, dear.
The woman who smelled like law enforcement was slow washing her hands. Worried eyes. She'd pulled her lower lip into her mouth to chew on it, making a decision. She looked like she wanted to intervene. She looked like she was choosing her words. For the most part, cops knew when to mind their own business, because who wanted to miss their flight over something inconsequential? Or shoot even for something consequential? If they were off the beat, there was no reason to stretch their neck out to potentially get caught in an unexpected guillotine. Sin let her hair fall over her face as she slid a hand down Nia's arm and sent her a warm, maternal smile. Maternal-ish. Sin wasn't mother material. Up until recently, she'd never considered it. Any baby fever she'd been experiencing, Sin chalked up to hormones and ignored them. Estrogen wasn't going to crap up her life with diapers and puke.
We're going to trust your therapist. I want you to feel comfortable. It's a short flight, up and then down, okay?
She looked at the childproof mechanism on the screw cap. Sin squeezed the sides, twisted, and picked a tiny white pill from the 7 that rested inside. 7, the normal prescription quantity written for this highly addictive drug. 7, Sin mused, was just enough pills. Crushed to a fine powder and mixed into a high-dollar room service meal coupled with a stiff drink, or 4, that could suppress the respiratory system and make the death look like an accidental overdose. But that wasn't necessary information for today. Nia held out an open palm obediently. She seemed to realize she'd put her toe a little too close to the "you're screwed" line. Nia popped the pill into her mouth and flashed her hand under the faucet to collect a palm full of water, slurping it down. Nia turned to Sin, opened her mouth, stuck out a rigid tongue. She swirled it from left to right and up to show that the pill wasn't being held in her cheek to spit out later. While Nia was insolent, Sin recognized that pill check was a practiced move. Sin wasn't aware that the girl had ever been institutionalized in a nut house. Someone needed to do better vetting. This was too dangerous a game to play with someone who was mentally unstable. Who knew? Maybe Nia had learned that step in a psych ward. Perhaps she'd learned that move in juvie. Juvie would be better. Not great, but better. Chapter 2. Reaper. Friday afternoon. Reaper Hamilton reached across the back bench of his buddy Stryker's SUV to unbuckle the baby's car seat. Fighting the straps, slush from the vehicle's roof sliding down his collar, Reaper angled the safety seat out. His wife, Kate, stood out of the snow flurries on the sidewalk in front of the airport's departure doors. As he walked around the front of the vehicle, Reaper noted the stress tightening the muscles around her mouth as she jostled their 10-month-old son, Zach, in her arms. Reaper knew that look on her face. The old adage, "ignorance is bliss," was a phrase that Reaper often thought about when Kate got that look in her eyes. Kate was so damn smart, and he loved that about her. Far from the bliss of ignorance, Kate's level of smarts and her huge sack of factoids meant she was constantly processing, thinking about ramifications, making a long list of outcomes, ways that things could go wrong. She'd always been that way. It just seemed to have magnified since Reaper's medical retirement from the military and all the crap he'd put her through these last few years. Kate jostled back Zack in one arm as she lifted the other to signal a porter over, then turned to Stryker and called out,
"Thanks for making the trek out here in this weather."
Stryker, a SEAL buddy from back in the day and now Reaper's temporary commander at Iniquis Security, hefted the bags from the cargo hold. "No problem." Slamming the back hatch down, Stryker moved to set the two suitcases onto the sidewalk. "So, Reaper's heading home Sunday and you're staying in Boston a while longer?" Reaper set the car seat with the luggage, then turned to unload Houston from the back.
"Man, that's a beautiful German Shepherd.
A woman crooned as Houston jumped to the sidewalk and shook her coat. Reaper reached down, adjusted Houston's service dog vest, and checked the connections on her lead. Houston ignored Reaper's efforts as she dragged over to Kate. Houston believed that her first and most important job was keeping baby Zach safe. Kate and Reaper agreed that Houston had the right priorities. A nose boop on the baby's bottom, a tactical sweep of the area, then Houston found her spot on Reaper's left side, squatting rather than plunking her butt down on the wet cement.
After the wedding, Kate explained to Stryker, all of us bridesmaids have a rental on the ocean for next week. The weather looks glacial up around Boston Harbor, but it's really about having a pretty view while we hang out, drink wine, and eat raw cookie dough out of the bowl. Girl talk.
She looked at Reaper when she said,
no boys allowed.
She tucked her head to kiss Zach.
Except for little guy, of course. He promised not to tattle on us.
She sent a wink Reaper's way. Sounds like you're set up to have a good time. Stryker turned to Reaper. Safe travels. Someone will be here to pick you up on Sunday. We'll meet at baggage claim. Yeah, man. Thanks. Reaper extended his hand for a shake. They had served together many years ago, but a brother was a brother. After they left the service, Stryker for family reasons, Reaper for medical ones, Reaper appreciated their ongoing friendship and Stryker's support. Heck, Reaper was almost 100% sure that the reason he even had his job at Iniquis Security had to do with Stryker recommending him. As Reaper made his way back into the workforce after years of physical and mental agony, and now a new lease on life after experimental interventions released him from the torture chamber inside his head, Reaper wasn't going to let anything he did tarnish Stryker's golden reputation with Iniquis Command. Everything was by the book and to seal level of perfection. No I was left undotted, no T left uncrossed. Dressed in his Iniquis operator's uniform of a charcoal gray compression shirt and tactical pants, Stryker slid back behind the wheel and angled into the slow-moving traffic headed toward the Iniquis campus. Reaper turned his focus to the porter. Pulling the printed tickets from his pocket, Reaper handed them over to the guy's outstretched hand. Yes, Kate had told him just to put the tickets on his phone, and sure, it would make things more streamlined, but Reaper hated the idea of cell phones, despised the concept. To him, they posed a clear security hazard. Unless he was ordered to carry one, Reaper had been old school in his communications. By contract with Iniquis, though, Reaper had to be within arm's reach of his cell phone, fully charged with audible volume at all times. All times, even when on R&R. And by all times, it meant in a waterproof bag on a lanyard around his neck when he was swimming. And fully charged meant Reaper carried two extra batteries in his tactical pants pocket. Excessive? For most jobs, maybe. Rules were rules, like it or not. If the world were imploding, Iniquis would need a way to inform and command. While the porter laced tags through the handles on their cases, Reaper slid his hand over the baby's damp curls, then tugged little guy's hat over his ears against the frigid wind. Zach pushed it right back off, ratcheting up his displeasure with a bat of his tiny fist. Kate sent Reaper the tiniest of tight-lipped smiles. He could see that Kate had projected a shit show for their flight to Boston. Heading north for their friend's wedding and some time with the old gang, this was supposed to be relaxing. Kate deserved some fun. It had been a hell of a few years for her. For them. He wished he could make her feel safe and comfortable. Wished she could zen the hell out. But then Kate wouldn't be Kate. And Reaper loved Kate with every cell in his body. If he were plotting their relationship on one of Kate's copious graphs she used when she was a biology teacher, Kate would be the crests and trough that kept their relationship interesting. The late-night debate part, the sobbing over a sad book part, the silky lace and ribbon panties part. He saw his role more like a straight line, or longitudinal waves, as Kate would phrase it. For most of their relationship, he'd considered himself the solid and steady base. What a crock of shit that was. Kate didn't like that wave description anyway. She said it made her sound like she was unstable. What would you prefer? Reaper had asked. Back when they were dating, back before everything, younger, less beaten to a pulp, she'd smiled.
I'm not saying I disagree with the concept, just that particular visual. I think of us more as ballroom dancers. There you are, athletic, graceful, supportive. And there's me, feeling my way around the music with some kicks and twirls.
He'd laughed and hurt her feelings. But it had been the idea of him as a graceful dancer that was ridiculous. For a man who had risen to top-tier Special Ops SEAL Team 6, he was miserable at trying to find and keep a beat outside of a marching cadence. And he'd learned over the last few years of hell that it was, in fact, Kate who was the rock, the steadiness. Reaper just had to make sure that her rock-solid tenacity, her unwavering belief in him, in them, was justified. Chapter 3. Sin. Friday afternoon. The long line at airport security gave the meds enough time to soothe Nia's craven nerves. The two women walked in the direction of their gate within arm's reach of each other, but they did it as strangers, each ignoring the other. Despite their rough start, they'd made it to their tactical position a few minutes ahead of time. Nia stood by a magazine kiosk, her back to the wall, seeming to focus on her phone, waiting. The airline staff closed the door on the last of the passengers boarding from that gate, and were now changing the signage over from the departing Chicago flight to the boarding Boston flight. The timing was perfect. The holding area had to be cleared out so Nia could choose the exact seat in their mission file. Soon the chairs would fill again. The flight to Boston was in an hour. Sin stopped to grab a bottle of water and a bar of chocolate at the coffee joint while she kept a surreptitious eye on Nia's behavior. Nia dragged her carry-on to the required seat, third row, the end closest to the window bank. There she plucked down and scrolled on her phone some more. After a few minutes, she opened her carry-on. Admittedly, the assigned task was ridiculously easy. Still, if Nia looked around furtively, if her body was too tight or robotic, if she were anything but casual, it could call attention, curiosity. But she did fine. It was only because Sin knew exactly what Nia was up to that she could decipher Nia's next moves. Nia retrieved the Dropbox, a small plastic container that held a micro thumb drive, from the side pocket of her bag. She peeled away the adhesive backing and palmed the device. Pretending to pop a piece of gum in her mouth, Nia hid the purpose of her gestures. Sin would point out that Nia should palm a piece of gum next time because she only remembered to fake chew a few times. Someone with a trained eye would remark on that. On this operation, though, that wasn't a concern. The family had hacked into the security cameras. This corridor's CTV would be nothing but static until the Boston flight took off. An hour was enough time for the security guards to see that there was an issue and call for technical support. It wasn't enough time for anyone to discover the breach. And, once the flight took off and everything came back online, everyone could chalk the event up to a random glitch. As Nia palmed the box, she pulled a college hoodie from her case, thrashing a bit as she tugged it on. That flail covered her actions. Slightly larger than a postage stamp, Nia pressed the box against the underside of her chair's seat. The act was easily concealed behind her luggage. Yes, indeedy. While the documents and photographs on the thumb drive were explosive to someone's life, the act of getting it into the right person's hands was rather banal. A newbie test. Nia zipped her case closed. Dragging her empty water bottle from her oversized purse, Nia glanced around. Neck craned, her gaze lit on a water fountain with a bottling spigot. She dragged her case over there, filled the bottle, then window shopped at the sandwich kiosk. Sin made her way to the gate, waiting for her flight to Boston where she'd fulfill another family directive. Sin kept Nia in her peripheral vision as Nia wheeled her things to the line at a gate catty corner. Nia was flying to North Carolina to meet another one of her soldier pen pals, home on leave. Garbled words from Nia's boarding call projected from the speakers, and there she went. Bye-bye. Bye now. Bye-bye. Sin took a well-deserved bite from her chocolate bar. Nia didn't do badly with her last step, Sin thought, without any emotion attached, just mental notes. The family would want Sin's assessment of Nia's work. She wasn't quite sure what she was going to say. The first time doing an assignment could be a bitch. Nerves could be surprising. On the other hand, Nia might actually have a stomach bug, and Sin was misunderstanding this situation. Nia had been given little in the way of training to make her more sure-footed, but lives and freedoms were on the line. Sin wasn't going to jail because someone was sloppy or gutless. Sin thought it was probably better that Nia had a strong handler, and that she stick to writing her "I want nothing more than to sit on your face" letters to the lonely soldiers far from home. For now, anyway. Maybe offer her some other honeypot duties and see how that went. Nia's role thus far in the family was simple. The Prokhorov family recruiter looked for young American women like Nia. There were criteria, of course. 18 years old was the minimum. Attractive, dysfunctional families who wouldn't give a rat's ass about the girl's welfare. Non-conformists, rebels, clean from both street drugs, police records, and communicable diseases. Unfazed by authority figures, except when those authority figures applied pain pressure to set limits within the family's business. Once spotted, these girls were recruited to Vienna, Austria, for a job interview that included a thorough physical of both the medical and bed-tumbling kind. They were then either hired by the family or sold to traffickers. Once the girls had been found and recruited, they were moved to a complex at the junction of Europe and Asia. Where exactly, Sin hadn't a clue. It was need to know, and honestly, Sin couldn't care less. At the complex, the girls were given the names and profiles of vulnerable U.S. soldiers, horny men who were far from home and longing for female attention. The girls became their lascivious, ego-stroking pen pals, tasked with befriending the soldiers stationed in places of interest to the Prokhorovs. Letters sailed back and forth. Those letters were usually sexual fantasies they shared with each other. The men shared theirs. The girls would follow a script created by their supervisor. More of a list, really. Tell him this. Tell him that. Porn on pink perfumed paper scrawled in curly, girly lettering. And, of course, the intimate pictures that were tucked inside. For your eyes only. I trust you with this because we have something special. I'm willing to be vulnerable for you. Be gentle with me. Men weren't trustworthy when they swaggered. Some random Idaho farm boy who registered a solid 3 on the attractiveness scale sure as heck wasn't going to protect the woman's photos when she was a 9 out of 10 on that scale. Hugging a teddy bear and playing with herself. Big heart with hot for you, Leo, proved this chick was rubbing it out thinking of him. The software programs kept track of everything. Most significantly, it ensured that the girl's images never overlapped by having the same gal write to more than one person at a single location. Since the areas where these guys deployed were often fluid, it took a computer to keep it all straight, especially since each girl might be flirting with maybe 100 lonely military men. The goal? Simple. The family wanted every piece of information they could gather on the U.S. military. A sentence here or there? Innocent. Innocuous. But 60 girls? 6,000 active targets? Priceless information came through the post. Those details accumulated like pixels on a photograph to bring the image into clear focus. And then the family could act. Nia was good at writing seduction and twisting men around her little finger. When the targeted soldier went home on leave, the girls who had proven themselves could fly home to the United States. They landed in D.C., where there was an apartment that the girls could claim as their home. The soldiers wouldn't be pen pals with someone in, say, Romania now, would they? A family member took in the correspondence each day, boxed the letters up, and shipped them to Vienna overnight. In Vienna, there were runners who took turns driving the box of letters to the girls. While the courier slept, the girls would respond. In the morning, the courier would return to Austria. In Vienna, they were same-day shipped to Washington, D.C. The D.C. manager would put American stamps on the letters and take them to the post office for shipping back to the soldiers. Sin thought of it like the American Pony Express, from one hand to the next, with machine-like efficiency. It was an impressive operation. This had gone remarkably well until last May, when one of their girls who had swung the Grand Slam and married a Delta Force operator was discovered living and spying at the fort. The family had to move their apartment to Location B. As planned, that move took less than 3 hours once the emergency button the gal wore around her neck as a favorite necklace was pressed. Before she could spill the beans, before the feds could bang on the door, they were gone. Now that chick was locked up in a federal pen for life. Stupid girl. Her Delta Force husband divorced her immediately, bowing his mea culpas to the powers that be for not recognizing the danger and bringing a deadly snake into the fort. Nia was one of those.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?